Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to another episode of Early Work, the show in which I demand performers and writers read me the creative writing of their teenage years. This week's guest is Jordan Brooks. To anyone unfamiliar with Jordan's work, he is a genre-bending, boundary-pushing, genuinely exciting comedian. Let me be the first to say he's the riskiest comic in the biz. I know how boring it is to earnestly plug someone I've already booked for a podcast you're about to hear, but this show isn't sponsored by Beer 52. Okay, it's the only podcast in the world that isn't, which means I've got plenty of time to tell you that Jordan is excellent and beer is pathetic. This episode is sponsored by Jordan Brooks. He spoke all about being an obnoxious little shit at school. Who wasn't? Doing singing, acting and dancing in stagecoaches run by his nan, wooden heads in his granddad's house, and then he read to us from his collection of spooky stories, poems and a funny joke. And boy, is that joke a funny joke. I mean, it's a joke that's got its own title, and it's also got an incredibly soft punchline. And there's also a poem about chickens and fire, so fair enough. You can't say fairer than that. You can't say riskier than that. Plus, I also read out maybe my best ever opening line to a poem that I've ever done. So I hope you enjoy the podcast. Here it is. Joining me this week on yet another lockdown edition of Early Work is Jordan Brooks. Hello, Jordan.
Hi, hello.
For those of you who don't know, listeners, Jordan Brooks is probably best known for when he and I successfully relaunched the Boulevard Theatre together.
Oh, yeah. Still haven't been paid for that.
Oh, actually, good point. Good point. Yeah. I'm glad I brought it up now. Oh, yeah. I suppose I haven't been paid for that either. What the fuck? Maybe it's because the gig was empty.
Oh, yeah. Is that... I didn't know that that's how it's judged on the... You get paid if you can get people through the door. I think we did agree a fee
regardless of whether we got people through the door. But it,
yeah, I'd be surprised if there was a bringer gig where you had to bring an entire audience with you.
A theatre's worth. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like starting a gig in a theatre at 11:30 p.m. isn't a great business model, isn't it?
In the middle of Soho as well.
In the heart of Soho. What I loved about that gig is it's like a brand new theatre that's been rebuilt. And then Kiri was comparing excellently. Mm. But everyone she spoke to and said, what do you do? Said, I'm an actor. Which means that, are you a bunch of people who are on a theatre's mailing list and got some free tickets for this evening? Yeah, just a bit. It was ridiculous. Yeah. There was like one middle-aged couple and then the rest of the audience. I think there were two genuine sales in that audience.
Oh, for sure they were. And they just had no idea. Do you know, you can just tell sometimes with an audience, they just don't know what it is that they've come to. And they leave knowing less somehow.
Yeah.
And it was one of those gigs where I went, I can't stay. I can't stick around for this. Even though it wasn't terrible, it didn't go badly, but you just feel almost like there's a ghost in the building. And you have to go. You're spooked.
I do remember, actually, you coming off and being quite panicked, asking for the key card to the dressing room. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Like, have you got the key card? Really... Have you got the key card to the dressing room? And I was like, fucking hell, what Christopher Nolan film is this? Like, I need the key card. I need the entry code. Just because you wanted to get your jacket.
What did he learn on stage?
Yeah.
What did he discover that I'm about to?
Did you plant a bomb while you were on?
Yeah.
Anyway, you left and then I absolutely smashed it. So, Jordan, good. Obviously it was fucking shit. If I had to guess what you were like at school, Jordan, and I do because it's the first format point of the show, what I've written is, okay, strap in for this. First up, I've put, spent a lot of time in corners or at the back of things. It continues to, if someone randomly took a photo of your classroom, everyone would look at that photo and then turn around and say, Jordan, have you always been there? Right? I don't mean that you're anonymous. I just can imagine you lurking occasionally. I've said prankster, but in a sophisticated way. So it wasn't like water balloons and whoopee cushions and basic shit like that. I think more like you found out how to access every school email on the intranet system. And then you would like set up an anonymous new email address and then use that to send everyone in the school porn. That's my theory. I put teacher's worst nightmare, but not in a show off to your mates kind of way, more in a, oh no, that quiet boy has set fire to the maths block kind of way. because I think it wasn't about the approval. It was more about just wanting to take the risk and going, fuck you, I can do what I want. But I've put the one time you didn't take any risks whatsoever was on non-uniform day when I think you went in with Zuckerberg levels of plain, unmockable clothing. I would also, the final point is, I would wager there was a girl that you were in love with who had absolutely no idea of that fact. Now, is any of that in any way true?
Do you know what? None of it.
Oh, really? Okay.
All right. Yeah,
it goes either way, doesn't it? Sometimes it's bang on, sometimes
way off. No, I can understand, it is accurate in the sense that that could easily apply to the person that I think you think I am. So
yeah,
I believe that you,
I
believe you've been very sharp and on the nose. It's just not my nose.
What I've described is, if there was like a weird movie now, we're called Jordan Goes to School, and it's you now in school. I think is what
that would be it. Yeah. If there was like a sort of a TV series and they were following me. And the producers were like, we think it'd be really funny if you could be the weird ghost in the corner. And I'd be like, absolutely, I can do that for money.
Yeah.
But actually at school, I was quite, I was a little bit shy, but I was also very, I went through periods of being incredibly loud and attention seeking. I was very I was very performing all the time. The one thing you're sort of quite accurate about is that I was like naughty, but in that way where the teachers would go, come on, mate, like this isn't you. Do you know what I mean? Like they'd be like, you're better than this.
Because is that because of the opposite of what I said? So it was because they thought you were trying to impress your fellow pupils.
Yeah, for sure. I was definitely
showing off,
definitely wanted their approval constantly. But a few times I'd be caught. I remember the headmaster calling me into his office and he said, you're a bit of a rebel without a cause. And I just went, I'm getting there. And I don't even know what I was talking about.
I mean, what are you possibly even getting that from? What does that mean? That means nothing.
What does that mean? It's just nothing. It's just pure bluster. Just confirming what he was saying. I may as well have just gone and walked out.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for saying those words at me.
So was there anything specific you did? So I've gone with pranks, like you sent the school porn, but were you doing anything? Were you just being like a loudmouth?
Yeah, I was just a loudmouth. But I was a funny kid. I was a really funny kid. So people just loved my disruptions, you know. And once you, as we know, once you get the buzz for that, once you get the taste, it's very hard to let go. So, I was very good at speaking. I was very good at entertaining people, so I really loved doing that. I think a lot of people found me incredibly obnoxious, but in that way where you go, oh, he's not confident, he's just externally insecure.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, where you go, well, we better leave it because he's clearly operating from a place of deep vulnerability.
Yeah. What was your style then? So if you were getting laughs all the time because you were doing back chat, what was your style? Were you just like sarcastic, or was it like big.
I was shape shifting. So I would be like sarcastic and detached and deadpan, and then another time I'd be really, you know, hyper. And I remember we had this poor German teacher who she just could not get control of the class, and everyone was being disruptive. And my form tutor set up a camera at the back of the room to record it, and I knew it was there. And I still acted up. I still did it. And there was one. She used to have this tub of sweets that she would give out as a sort of treat for anyone who could say something in German or whatever. And I crawled under the tables to get to it while she was teaching. And I think that was one of the most obnoxious, awful things, because seeing an adult generally look at you with. Look at you with a sort of, oh, the boundaries that I set didn't work, and now I don't know what to do. Is very haunting, and I'm ashamed to say I was responsible for a lot of those looks throughout my time.
Yeah, well. I know exactly where you're coming from. In like year 10, I think my form had a reputation for being one of the worst forms in history, and it had a lot of people like you're describing yourself in it. I was much more of a sarcastic, attitude-y back chat. I mean, very much the vibe I've continued to monetize. Whereas other people were like sort of more aggressively naughty and physical, and were just like smash chairs over each other and just throwing things around. And there was one time we had a form tutor called Mr. Gritton, who was a modern language French teacher. And he was getting so frustrated by everything that was going on that, quite teary, he then said, right, everyone outside, line up against the wall. We're leaving this room. You just line up against the wall. And then opposite where we were lined up was the English block. And from the top floor, a boy 2 years above just kept leaning out of the window and shouting, Gritton lives in Britain, and then ducking down. And he didn't know what to do, because he just literally kept going, Gritton lives in Britain, ducking down, so he couldn't be seen. Mr. Gritton would turn around, look up and go, who said that? Who said that? And everyone was like, but you do, sir, you do. And he couldn't understand why we were mocking him for living in Britain. And we weren't. No one gave a shit. It was just funny to say, Britain lives in... What, can you punish someone for that? You can't. I mean, are you a classic case of what comedians tend to be like at school? Because you were good at things like drama and English, did you have like one insanely encouraging teacher?
Yeah. They're like, well, if we encourage this man, he might not kill himself in his early 20s. So I had a drama teacher called Jill Whitlock, who still gets in touch with me. So she emails me out of the blue all the time. She emailed me when I won the comedy award and said, I just read in the paper and I can't tell you how proud I was. She sent me this really long sort of thing about seeing something in me in drama and seeing how much it meant to me at the time and how much of a sort of sanctuary I think I probably treated it, because I was just, you know, I felt, yeah, I was very, she was just utterly wonderful and so encouraging. And she... she emailed me almost like 2 or 3 months ago with a link to a job, just to be like, I hear your industry's probably, you know, under threat, so here's a link to a copywriting job. I mean, it's just wonderful. I mean, I ignored it, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, you can read that one of two ways. You can see that as an insult, or you can see it as a lovely you know, olive branch.
Yeah.
What were the performances you would do in drama? Was it like, so obviously you've got to do it in class, but were you doing any extracurricular like performancey stuff?
No, not really. My family are quite heavily tethered to Stagecoach Theatre Arts. I don't know if you ever heard of that growing up.
Of course.
Yeah. So my nan ran some Stagecoach schools. My mum did when we lived in Merseyside. She ran a couple in Chester and Wilmslow. And so I obviously just kind of took part. So there was a bit of, you know, there was a bit of sort of, I guess, extracurricular drama stuff. But it was never, you know, if anyone who went to Stagecoach will know that the purpose is not to get you prepped for your RADA audition. It's very much just to boost confidence and to get people doing something fun on a Saturday morning. So, but that was all I did, really. But that, I did find that very... fun.
So what do you actually do in Stagecoach, though? So like, if you're going there on a Saturday morning and you're there for, say, an hour and a half, are you doing like zip zap boing type quick thinking improv-y games, or
kind of
That was like a drama warm-up that I remember from my various equally lame clubs. but other than that, we would then, like, the ones I would go to, it wasn't Stagecoach, I don't think, but they were more like, write a play about this in 10 minutes and come back and perform it for the group.
No, they were, so it was an hour of singing, an hour of acting, and an hour of dancing.
Oh my God. Yeah. What absolute hell.
It was, I mean, I loved the drama bit, but the rest of it, not so much. Sometimes I would just duck in, do the drama, and then not do the rest. Swanning it around like I was better than everyone else, just because my mum, you know, owns the place. I mean, she didn't own the venue. She just had the space for 3 hours a day. It was good. I really enjoyed it, but I was also very shy still. You know, I had no confidence whatsoever in my abilities, so I never really pushed myself to do it much more than just sort of dipping my toe in for a bit of a confidence boost every once in a while.
What happens in that hour of singing? Is everyone, they just go sit, start singing now, and then everyone just sings, or do they go, we're all going to sing this hot song together?
Yeah, they don't just go, right, sing what comes to mind on the count of three and just hope that someone syncs up with another person. It was mostly like old show tunes and stuff and musicals. So it's just someone playing a piano while we all stand with song sheets and bellow for an hour.
Okay, well, so that's the singing thing. From that, I can get a slight idea of what the dancing hour would be. Now tell me what the acting hour would be. Someone just holds the Die Hard script and says, go.
Basically, yeah. We did a few things. We do sort of a mix of games, improv games. So there would always be an end of term presentation for the parents to explain to them why they're paying, you know, £200 a term. Here is what your child has been doing. And it was often like in a very, very abridged version of Bugsy Malone.
Of course. Sorry, how did I not guess that?
Yeah,
it's always Bugsy Malone.
Six Bugsies a year.
Yeah.
There was one time that they did Chicago. Feels like a bit of a misstep.
Sure.
I remember my mum doing the choreography for it in the living room. So I had a real sort of love-hate relationship with all of that stuff because I hated hearing these soundtracks. So I hated musicals growing up because my mum would be constantly trying to choreograph this dance for it because she was doing that. And she'd also worked a lot in amateur theatre. So she was always directing and choreographing stuff in these little theatres. And so I really grew to resent, because I'd have to be like, you know, as a morose teenager, sidestepping my mum doing some flirty Chicago-esque dance. But I've grown to really tolerate musicals considerably.
Yeah, it's a lot to overcome that. If every time you hear any kind of show tune, you close your eyes and picture your mum doing some sort of fucking shimmy, then yeah. You're going to go, that isn't for me. Good God, yeah. I mean, there's so many issues come with all of that.
Really didn't expect this. Really didn't expect this all to come out.
Did you ever, back at school, if you were like being a little shit and showing off and stuff, and then in the meantime, you're off doing Stagecoach type stuff, did you ever put yourself out there in a stagey way at school? Not necessarily doing extracurricular drama, but say like end of term skits or like saying, oh, I've written a thing, I'll read that out at this.
God, no, I never did. There were a few end of term talent shows, but I remember one guy who loved Michael Jackson. His name was Michael, and he really, very similar to me actually, he'd focus on one thing and be so obsessed and so absorbed in that thing to the point where he'd be imitating the main character of whatever film it was. Or he became really obsessed with Michael Jackson, and I think he did Earth Song, and he got two of his friends to do it as well. And they were and I kid you not, so that the whole time he's doing this dance and he's singing along, and he's got his two friends standing on stage either side of him with their backs to the audience for like almost the entirety of the song. And then during like the final chorus, they just turn around and just start clicking their fingers. That was it. And it was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Shit, did they know that was funny?
I don't think they still know it was
funny. Right. Did they?
They'll take that ignorance to the grave. And good for them. They should.
Did the audience laugh? Did the audience like fight? Did they have the piss taken out of them for it, or was it sort of like?
No, because the kids were just sort of baffled. Like, you know, when you're that age, you're just sort of like a cat.
Yeah.
You're sort of like a cat watching other cats. You don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, you're just staring. Yeah. In our Leavers thing, in like at the end of year 11, two of my mates did the Napoleon Dynamite dance together.
Oh my.
Yeah, in like a big assembly as well. And like all the parents were there, all the year 11s, all the parents and all the teachers.
Oh,
and they
my
just
God.
Did it. And so like, if you've not seen it, it's just the weirdest. Especially
Do
given
people
that
enjoy it.
It famously ends with him, the song just like abruptly stopping, and then he just like runs off stage really awkwardly. So if you've never seen that film, you're just thinking, oh, those poor lads.
Those poor but weirdly synchronized,
perfectly
lads.
Choreographed lads. I think people did enjoy it. Yeah, I think most people had seen it. Like most of the pupils had seen it, so they. And the parents at those things are basically just going, well, this is an hour and a half of private jokes, so how are we going to enjoy this?
Exactly, this is an hour. Well, yeah, and this is an hour of us side-eyeing other parents that we vaguely like. Actually, I did do something embarrassing that, I mean, no one knows it was embarrassing. I did, there was a sort of end of school presentation. This is just, this is after my GCSEs, and they were handing out awards for people getting awards for, I remember this guy called Dan got an award for never missing a single day or whatever. And I got one for drama. So Jill, old Witters, came through and gave me I guess the equivalent of a lifetime achievement award, where it was like contributions to drama. And it just meant
16.
It was just like, you did a lot of drama at school. And but it was a big deal. Like, you know, they gave me like 40 quid, which I spent on weed. And I went up, and this is like 200 people in the gym, and I go up, and I collect this. I get handed this envelope, and there's a table behind the guy, the teacher presenting it, full of trophies, and I think, well, the envelope is just the precursor. Surely I've got a wallop of a trophy coming. There wasn't one, but I had already turned around, waiting to be handed a trophy. And so what I did was, realizing my mistake, I turned around back to the audience and then did a big bow and then left. No one knows. Everyone thinks that I was just doing a classic, you know, arrogant
old Brooksy's
display.
Doing one of his Brooksy bits.
Yeah.
It's classic Brooks to do that. That's why Witters loves him so much, because he's so confident. No, he but just probably, wanted a trophy.
It's probably just characterized exactly what my act is as well on stage, where people go, Oh, it looks like he knows what he's doing. No, it's pure bluster.
I once won an award on at the end of a school trip for trying new foods.
That's so funny. Were you one of the people, one of the niche ones where they've run out of
Yeah, most improved.
Categories.
It was just like earliest to the bus.
Yeah, I once got that. So everyone on our German trip got like funniest on the bus and most charismatic and best looking, which seems problematic now. And me and my friend got something like the Water Rapids Boys, because on one of the days we'd gone to the swimming baths, and the teachers happened to see us hanging out by the rapids.
Absolutely ridiculous. Probably everyone went there.
Yeah, everyone went there.
The Water Rapids. Oh my God, look, it's the Water Rapids. I bet you got recognised all around the town for the next couple of years. Oh, the Water Rapid Boys are coming. God, careful, they're pretty quick. They're pretty slippery. I got another one once. What was that? It was... that was it. Once in... like, we were probably in year eight, and then my friend, my best mate, Sam, and then two of the girls from the popular group made this really weird thing called the year... oh, it was year nine. It was called the Year Nine List. And just out of nowhere, everyone just got an email, right? And it just had different categories, like best hair, best nose, best dress sense, and all this. And like loads of different things. Best footballer, like biggest cutie, and just all this stuff. And they just like gone through and made this list and then sent it to everyone. And it was so random. Everyone's like, what's this? But it's all anyone talked about for ages. And I got safest.
What does that even mean?
And I asked him what it meant, and he was like, oh, like you, like as in most trustworthy, like I can tell you a secret and you won't tell anyone. And I was like, yeah, but you are my best friend. If anyone else tells me a secret, I feel I've been pretty biased by the judging panel here. Were you writing anything at this time, like that you were showing anyone or not showing anyone in your own time?
I was, I did a bit of writing when I was sort of as a teenager. I got really into writing comedy scripts, and I'd write, I think my first comedy script was unsurprisingly, the biggest error you can make in writing. It was called The Comedy Script, and it was about, let me tell you, two people trying to write a comedy script.
Oh, that's clever. And it's the first time I've ever heard that. So meta, so quick.
But I was writing bits and pieces. But
I bet if you were a teenager writing that, you must have thought, well, I am a genius. I mean,
I've changed the game. Sure. Oh, absolutely, 100%. I thought, why has no one ever done this before? And then you grow up, you get older and you go, oh, yeah, you learn why people don't do it. But I did a lot of writing when I was a kid. Like, I was quite, yeah, I've always been quite creative. When I was at primary school, I must have been about six or seven, and I wrote this book, which I've still got. I've got here with me. It's called Amazing Ghost Stories and Some Poems and a Funny Joke. And I actually sent it off to a publisher as well.
When you were six?
When I was six. Well, my parents did. And we sent it to a children's book publisher, I think, mistakenly believing them to be a publisher that releases books written by children.
Yeah. And run by children.
Run by children. Let me tell you, the fierce, cold-hearted response I got from them confirmed that it is not run by anyone who was ever a child.
Yeah. Oh, God. Have you got the response?
I've got the response here. Yeah. I've got the response. So they wrote it in. So it's just a classic generic typed out response. And then underneath, someone has then handwritten something, clearly recognizing that it wasn't an adult who had written Amazing Ghost Stories and Some Poems and a Funny Joke.
Yeah.
And they should probably be a bit kinder. I can read that to you, or I can read you some of the stories if you want first.
Yeah, let's have the stories first because we need some context. I need to know if I'm going to side with this rejection letter or not, I think. Also, Jordan, just to let you know, I mean, you know that opening by saying the joke is going to be funny heaps far too much pressure on yourself. I mean, you'd never do that in a gig.
But I almost called my live show last year Amazing Ghost Stories and Some Poems and a Funny Joke because I thought that's a really that is a funny title. But as you say, people will be like coming in, turning up, aggressively demanding.
This joke better be funny. He said it was funny. He said these ghost stories would be amazing. They're only brilliant.
You better have at least three poems because some poems implies more than two. So I can read you. I'll read you the first. they're really short and they don't scan very well. Here we go. The first one is called, in fact, so the book that I made, it's got a title, it's got a cover, it's got a contents page as well. Here we go. Here's the first. This is one of the scary stories. The Night Fright. Once in a theatre, a man was alone, checking the doors if they were locked. The theatre was being closed down for 2 years. The man was just locking his office when he heard a noise behind him. He looked behind him, but no one was there, so he turned around and locked the door. But just then, he heard the noise again, so he looked behind him. But just before he turned back around again, something grabbed him and chained him to the wall and then built another wall over him. The man behind the wall suddenly died, and then when the people came back, they saw that there was an extra wall. They knocked it down, and when they knocked it down, there was a skeleton. End of story.
Great, I love it. I mean, it actually is a scary story not to find out what the mysterious thing that grabbed him and did that is. We have no idea what that is. And you say these are ghost stories in the title, so I'm thinking it's a ghost, but it can't be.
It could have been a cold-blooded murderer. I mean, it could have been natural causes that this person could have bricked themselves up and died.
It is a very
naturally.
Strange thing to do as a murderer, isn't it? To dispose of a body in the exact place that you killed it. The first place you would look for a old theatre security man is probably in the place he was locking up.
Yeah, a suspiciously freshly built wall.
Yeah, and then there's a brand new wall, like in a video game, that you know where you break that down. Yeah. And then you get the treasure.
I can interact with that easily.
It's pretty scary, mate. It's that level of kid darkness where, like, all parents think that kids are scared of ghosts or whatever. Mm. But they're scared of being kidnapped. I mean, as a kid, I was like, no, my fear isn't the dark because what if a ghost emerges? It's what if a man climbs through the window and takes me somewhere I don't know? And that plays on that fear a lot more of, no, what if I get chained up and then someone bricks a wall around me so no one can see?
Exactly. And this story was, in fact, all of these stories, I think, are what ones that my dad told me. So these are things that my dad would tell me to sort of spook me.
Sorry. I've got to stop you there. What the fuck, mate?
Yeah, go on. You know how dads would spook their kids for no reason?
Sorry, your dad told you that story about someone chaining someone up to a wall and then building another wall on top of them.
Yeah, he's trying to inspire me creatively.
And then
did
leaving
your parents
them...
not encourage you?
Well, you haven't been inspired. You just plagiarized him.
That's true. I haven't credited him.
If that was the aim, to inspire you, then all he's done is encourage theft.
So there's a few. There's one. There's a taxi. So the next one is called The Taxi Fright. and that's about someone who turned out to be a ghost. It was a passenger, obviously. The next one is called The Ghost.
That's pretty root one.
Yeah.
Back to basics.
Yeah. Back to basics. I'll read this one. I haven't read this one in a while. as if I read them regularly. In Yorkshire, a wooden head is called George. Every night he turns into a ghost and goes into the garage. And when you walk past the garage, you hear noises and he come in every room. But if you have a field... George the ghost will walk around it. Okay, so less of a story, more of just a sort of
sort of struggling to follow that one. So in Yorkshire, right, good, perfect way to start a story, set the scene. Where are we? We're in Yorkshire. Exterior Yorkshire, night. A wooden head is a ghost called George, and he's a wooden head. So
did I stutter?
Yeah, okay. And then he goes in every room.
Yeah.
Yeah? He come in every room.
He come in every room.
Unless you've got a field. And then he just walks around the field.
Yeah, I don't know why this isn't landing.
No, I suppose it is now. The reason it's not is because I'm trying to imagine what your dad told you for you to write that.
Yeah, for a child to write this, fine.
Did your dad tell you that one piss?
For an adult to tell this story. Son, I've got another one for your book. Listen to this.
I just imagine he gets home from the pub really pissed and you're like, oh, dad, I need another spooky story. He goes, ah, it's a wooden bloke called George. He walks around in your house unless you got a field. Night.
So, yeah, that was another one. That one, actually, I think I probably came up with myself. It's, I think my granddad lived in Yorkshire, and I think he had a wooden head in his house. He loved.
Oh, thank God! The pregnant pause you did then, at that moment. my granddad lived in Yorkshire, and I think he had a wooden head. And then it took a beat before you said in his house, and I was thinking, Jordan, obviously open with this. How have you taken this long to tell me? Oh, sorry, it's based on my wooden granddad. But still, that's an interesting thing to hear. He had a wooden head in his house.
It was like a sort of, I guess, like a. It was like one of those phrenology heads, but without any insight into how the brain functions.
Right. Okay. So pointless.
Absolutely pointless. Yeah,
decorative wooden head. Okay. Fine. And were you scared of it? Were you scared of going to your granddad's house?
Yeah, the whole time, because it was a really nice. So my granddad was a producer for the BBC in like the 60s and 70s. He did some good shows. He made All Creatures Great and Small. He produced that. He was responsible for adapting that, which is something that people have heard of. He also directed a couple of episodes of Doctor Who, which he hated, but never tired of telling the story. And he then produced Triangle. Which was an ill-fated soap opera set on a cruise liner, and notoriously, if you ever watch those like TV heaven, telly hell type shows, it's often something that gets brought up as an example of a disaster. And after that, I think he got paid off, or he spent the rest of his life living off the BBC pension. So he was given this BBC pension and given money to never make TV again.
Yeah.
And so he lived in Yorkshire in this beautiful bungalow. It had like an indoor swimming pool and stuff. And I was like, we were just blown away as kids going, but how do people live like this? And it turns out, briefly, if you're not looking after your finances. So as a kid, every time I'd go to Yorkshire, he'd have a different, smaller, less elaborate house. As obviously he ran out of money. He was like, he was very selfish. Like he never gave any money to his family or anything. He just loved living in a big house and treating his husband, who was 30 years his junior. He was living it up.
Amazing. And then and you keep going, oh, we're going to granddad's house. We've missed the turning. No.
No. He lives in a flat now. He lives in a bed set with his wooden head.
Yeah, but he kept his wooden head the whole time.
Okay, this next one is called A Ghost Who Looked in a Room.
Let's hear it.
Once in a pub, a lady was in her room brushing her hair, but just then a ghost walked past and looked in her room. The lady saw the ghost in her mirror. She went down the stairs and said to a man, "Nobody is allowed up there." The man said, "I know who it was." The lady said, "Who is it?" The man said, "A man had this pub before us and he died up there."
Wow, I mean, that's it reminds me of The Office.
There's been a ghost up there.
Yeah, I think there's been a ghost. I think there's a landlord up there. I think an ex-landlord. Oh God. Yeah, fine. That story checks out. I mean,
well, that was based on my nan who lived in Yorkshire. Actually, it was on my dad's side. My granddad was from my mum's side. My nan briefly ran a pub in Yorkshire before she moved to Birkenhead, and she had this story that she told about her mum seeing a ghost. And my nan was very much into ghosts in a way that was increasingly amusing as I got older. Like, she'd be like, "Oh, I swear I heard a ghost going down the stairs," and my dad would be like, "You can't even hear the telly, what are you talking about?"
Yeah.
You
know?
So she told that story, and obviously as a kid I was just I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
So once again, it's a stolen story.
Yeah, I think that's the common thread here, isn't it?
To be fair, at no point in the title Amazing Ghost Stories, Some Poems and a Funny Joke do you claim to have written any of them. This is a curated by Jordan Brooks, is what it will say.
Yeah.
Age six.
Yeah. The next one's called The Ghost in the School. Fine. Next one is called The Ghost in the Garden. They're all pretty, I mean, you know, they are.
I think we should hear The Ghost in the School.
You want to hear The Ghost in the School?
Yeah, I think we need to know about that.
Once in a school, everyone was working when the teacher said to a boy, "Go and change your reading book, please." So the boy went up all the steps. While he was going up the steps, he heard a noise. He looked behind him, but no one was there. So he stopped walking again. But just then he heard the noise again. So he looked all around him, but no one was there. But just then a ghost grabbed him and took him away.
It's quite similar to The Night Fright. There's a lot of, he looked round, no one was there, he looked round again, no one was there, and then he got grabbed.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and he turns round and it's him.
Yeah. That's nice, I like that story. Doesn't need to be in a school. But
didn't need to be in a school, didn't need to be written.
Yeah, fair enough.
So The Ghost in the Garden's actually a little, it's got some interesting imagery. Okay. Once a boy was in the garden playing with his football when a ghost flew down from the sky. A boy ran to a tree and the ghost grabbed the boy's hand, and the boy's hand changed to a skeleton's hand, but the skeleton's hand turned brown and the brown hand had a ribbon across it.
Oh, what does that mean? Wow. What's this a metaphor for?
Hey, look, once my work is out there, it's not for me to tell you.
Right, it's all about
what it
interpretation,
is or isn't about.
Is it?
All about interpretation. It's just sort of it's just a random collection of things that I thought were scary.
Yeah, a skeleton immediately turning brown is one thing.
Turn to skeleton, turn brown, ribbon.
I mean, fucking, I can't even. Normally, I like to analyse what guesswork could mean. And it's been argued that I'm reading too much into things. I don't think any amount of reading into that is ever going to do justice to what the fuck was going on in the psyche of a six-year-old Jordan Brooks. Because, I mean, what does the brown thing mean? What does the ribbon mean? I think it's a metaphor for capitalism.
I mean, they're all about capitalism, if you want to get into it.
The ghost in the mall.
Yeah. So here's the next one. This is a poem. Would you like to hear the poem?
Yes, please.
I think there's a couple of poems. A poem about fire.
Here we go.
Once a fire caught on a wire and went to the kitchen and went down picking and found a chicken and started picking and found a bone and heard a tone.
Was that the...
Okay.
Oh, right, sorry. Okay, so once there was a fire that...
Yeah, you heard.
Finds a chicken. Is that... Yeah. The next step is...
No, the fire caught on a wire.
Catches on a wire.
Yeah, keep up. And then it went down to the kitchen. And then it went down picking. Now, I've written picking as P-I-C-K-E-N. I don't know if that's a
went
word.
Went down picking. Maybe that's a place.
Picking. Maybe it's a place.
And then picking comes up in a minute again, doesn't it? And is that a different spelling?
That's a different spelling. That's just picking. Yeah. So picking is... it means to peck.
Well, fair enough.
Okay, so do you know, like, I'm not...
Sorry, you, where, have you
I'm
got...
I'm not an idiot. I'm not an idiot.
You are now. You weren't then. We both are now. I mean, how is your six-year-old vocabulary better than both of ours now? Went down picking. Fuck it, where you got that from?
What? Absolutely no idea.
So it caught on a wire... went to the kitchen.
So it went down. So the fire went down to the kitchen. And it started pecking.
Yeah,
as fires are wont to do, and then it found a chicken.
Ironic.
And it started picking at the chicken with the flames, and then it found a bone, and then oh, what's that? It's interrupted. It heard a tone.
Right. Well, that's the fire alarm.
Fire alarm.
Fire alarm. It must be. Fire alarm.
Must be. It's got to be.
I mean, there's literally nothing else that it could ever be. Smoke alarm, fire alarm. That's what you got. That is fascinating. A fire, you personifying a fire, essentially. Well, anthropomorphizing a fire. It goes and acts like a chicken to a chicken. Mm-hmm. And then is interrupted by a fire alarm.
Yeah, there's a lot of things imitating other things.
Oh, fuck it up, yeah. It's hard to keep up.
It's hard to...
Christ.
So, that was one of them. Right, back to basics. The scary footsteps. Once in a pub, some men were drinking after 11 o'clock. Yep.
Oh.
The men were friends of the owner in the pub. It was against the law to be drinking after 11 o'clock. I don't think it ever has been. And there was a man who was deaf and he could not hear a thing. And while the men were drinking, they heard some footsteps and the men thought that the police were coming. So all the men, including the man who was deaf, went up to the door where they heard the footsteps. They opened the door and no one was there. So all the men went back to where they were sitting and the deaf man said that he heard the footsteps.
Okay.
I mean, that is my nan. That is something my nan. Absolutely, that is something that my nan. I can hear my nan saying it word for word.
What really? She would say. I mean, really, she would tell you that story and it would be. And this deaf bloke said, I can hear the footsteps. And then that would have been the end of the story. And everyone was like, oh.
Yeah.
So your nan would have told you a story about how it's illegal to drink after 11 o'clock in a pub.
Yeah.
I mean, surely she's just referring to a lock in.
I think she means a lock-in.
And your child brain thinks that after 11 o'clock is the latest it's possible to be. And the approach to fearing that the police are coming to get you is to go and answer the door to the police. That's the response. Or do they go to the other back door to leave? Because then they go to the door, open the door, and no one's there.
Let's just pour over the finer details here. So... And while the men were drinking, they heard some footsteps, and the men thought that the police were coming. So all the men, including the man who was deaf, went up to the door where they heard the footsteps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
they all went, quick, the police are coming, let's go and meet
them. Open the door, we might as well say hello.
Yeah, let's not, quick lads, let's mobilise. Let's not be impolite.
Okay, well, I think it's time to hear the joke.
So, this joke is called Three The Warren. One day, Jerry the taxi driver was driving when Roger from the office said to go to 3 The Warren. Jerry thought he meant Frieda Warren. Jerry said, "Where is she?" Roger said, "What do you mean?" Jerry said, "I'm going to Frieda Warren, ain't I?" Jerry said, "No, silly, number 3 The Warren." "Oh," said Jerry.
I mean, yeah, I suppose, yeah. And I suppose you've got no choice but to send that to the judges of Dave's Joke of the Fringe. Given that there's no Fringe this year, I think you need to send that in.
I might submit it next year.
Genuinely submit it. Yeah, in the fake PR rounds of going,
yeah.
Oh, the Guardian's top 15 jokes of the Fringe, the Telegraph's 87 best jokes of the 2021 Fringe. When they haven't been to see a single show and you just get your PR to send them 3 jokes. You should absolutely send that and see if you get any replies saying, "Sorry, what are you talking?" Sorry, is that in Jordan's show? Is that really in Jordan's show? Also, it's nice to have a joke with a title. You don't often get a joke with a title.
No, I might start adding I might start being way more formal about my jokes.
This joke is called, every time on stage, this joke is called.
This one's called Airplane Peanuts. Okay.
It does also give away a fair bit of information about the joke, but it doesn't crucially give away the punchline, which is handy.
Which is "Oh," said Jerry.
Which is "Oh," said Jerry. That should be your punchline. You know, actually, that is like exactly the punchline Andrew Dice Clay uses. You've essentially gone "Oh!" at the end of your joke. You are a young Andrew Dice Clay, and I've always said that.
I've imagined myself saying it in like Madison Square Gardens. Yeah.
No, I said 3 The Warren. Oh! I now have to score your work. It comes to the time where I must score your work on 3 categories, as always. Those categories are originality, pure teen horniness, and Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score, which is how close is it to your work now? Does it show the potential of a future star? So each category is out of 5. First category, originality. Now, I do find it pretty original to write a book called Amazing Ghost Stories, Some Poems, and a Funny Joke.
Yeah.
I do think, at the age you were, that's quite an original idea. I also like that there's consistent themes throughout the work, which is pubs, fire, and ghosts. But you have told me that a lot of these stories, you are just repeating stories you were told by your nan or your dad. But there's other ones where you've just based it on reality, like the wooden head. And this, you know, some of them are pretty wild. I was going to, because you told me that your dad would just tell you these stories and then you've written them up, I was going to give you a 2. But because the skeleton goes brown and then has a ribbon on it, which no one will ever be able to analyze and understand what that means, I'm going to bump it up to a 4 out of 5 for originality. Pure teen horniness. Well, I don't feel comfortable. These are,
I'd like to hear it,
some of the least horny stories and poems I've ever heard in my life. I can't even read into that. There's not even subtext here that implies anything. There's a lot of stealing boys.
Yeah, a lot of boys getting stolen.
Boys getting stolen. Pubs.
A lot of ghosts in the corner, in the background.
There's nothing sexual at all. It's got to be a 0. 0 out of 5.
Do you know what? Happy with that.
Yeah. And then finally, it's Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score. How close is it to your work now? Now, what I would say is it's absolutely identical. well, what I think is, I like the meta title. That does show me something. The fact that you're telling us sort of what you're going to do with this, and you're sort of breaking down the idea of a book, just saying exactly what it is. I like that.
Thank you.
There is a bit of a lie in it. You say some poems. That definitely does imply more than 2. There's only 2 poems. That reminds me of you fake out ending to your show.
Oh, yeah.
A funny joke. And the joke is, it's pretty anti-comedy. Plus, obviously, you've got your Andrew Dice Clay catchphrase in there. I've got to go for... There's darkness in it. The whole thing's dark because it's all about people getting trapped and murdered and skeletons and stuff. If you do dark stuff now, it's much more existential and more about mental health. But
yeah, if it like being bricked in, that I would probably describe that like mentally happening rather than physically.
You turn around, no one was there, and then suddenly you're bricked in, and then people come back, and it's in a theater, remember? So if you're, it's like you feel penned in within the confines of a theater, and you just want to be able to create and take. I mean, absolute bollocks, not true, but anyway, I will give you a 4 out of 5 for Mickey Mouse Club. So that is 8 out of 15, a very respectable score.
Lovely, thank you so much.
Now we come to the point where I must read you something of mine. I was much older than you. I was 16, I believe, when I wrote this. It's in a book I've been reading from a lot of this series, which is Roy Lichtenstein's Wham poster on a notepad that I got from the Tate as a teen. And this book is full. It's a sketchbook, but I just filled it with like very first draft poems that I never looked at again. And this is quite short, and it doesn't have a title, but it has one of the most incredible opening lines to anything I've ever written.
Okay.
If only open heart surgery actually left you with an open heart. And you start from this hollow past, a fast relief, a parting sheath, a heart's belief. The more open I become, the more vulnerable I am. The more closed I then result, the more I give a damn. And the more I pine for romantic surgery to mend, no matter how pristine and fine a metaphor cannot defend from a love virus, we can't pretend we're survivors.
Oh my God.
What do you think of that? Any questions?
Genuinely, if I wrote that now, I think I'd be like, I might be able to build something from this.
Right, explain to me where the merit is in that. Because sometimes I read the poems on here, and then people say to me, that's actually a good poem. And I think, well, I can see why you think that, because it's got good rhyming structure and it's like dense. It rhymes densely. I couldn't defend this.
Well, firstly, it is a beautiful opening line.
Is it though? Because what am I getting at? What am I getting at? That I'm going out with a girl who's just had to have open heart surgery and she still is a bit closed off to me.
Yeah. But I think that isn't, I think taking something, a physical thing, and applying it to a more sort of emotional experience for someone that's of 16 is pretty good. And to try and describe the sort of second half is you're trying to talk about openness but also being closed, and being closed through being open. Like there's a lot of interesting stuff in there that I certainly wouldn't have done when I was 16. I would have done an open heart surgery where he cuts the heart open and there's just another open heart surgery inside.
Yeah, fair enough. And that's all based on your granddad moving to smaller and smaller houses. Russian doll home.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go for the scores. So number one, I need your score on originality out of 5.
Well, look, a teenager writing a love poem is embarrassingly trite. So but I do think that there's some interesting stuff with the rhymes. I would give it a 2 for originality.
2.
Because of the imagery, because of the interesting use of like open heart surgery.
Okay. Yeah, because of the best opening line in the history of poetry, sure. pure teen horniness.
5, baby.
Yeah. Parting sheath.
Parting sheath.
Referring to a condom I've not yet needed to use. and the final one is Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score. How much potential does it show for who you know me to be now?
Do you know what? I'm going to give it a 4, and I don't want to say that insultingly, but you're very good. Your stuff is very wordy. You know, there's a lot of words stuff. It's clear. It's very evident here of your fascination with words. So I would say it's a strong indicator, not of content, but certainly of form and the focus that you have.
And plus, my most recent tour show was called Love Virus. So
was it actually?
No, of course not. I mean, imagine if it was. The fact that was believable to you. Yeah, we're just going to see Rhys James, Love Virus. I think it's going to be pretty. That's going to be pretty good. Okay, cool. Which means that I got 13 out of 15. So that is 13 to 8. That means that I win the episode. But as ever, the message of the show is that we're both losers. That's the whole point. So now all we're left with, Jordan, is time for you to read us your final piece that we will produce up and put music under, some sound effects, whatever's appropriate. And I believe this is from a different book.
Yeah, so this is I was a little bit older. I was about 10, 11. And so so my parents got divorced and I moved to Surrey, moved down to Molesey, West Molesey. And so I joined a new school and again, for some reason, wrote this little book where they like laminated the cover, and it's called The Haunting of St. Lawrence School. And I'll read you the first paragraph and then I'll read you the last paragraph, because it's not crazy long, but it's not that interesting. But the first paragraph does give you an indication of where I was at in my life.
Right.
I didn't like my new school. It gave me the creeps. My mum had had enough of Liverpool, so she wanted to live somewhere else. I told her, I don't want to go and live here. But no, it wasn't working. I knew I was going to have to put up with it for a long time. My new school was terrible. I couldn't stand it. Anyway, my name's Jordan. I have not made any friends yet, but I'm sure I will sooner or later. I watched the news that night and was shocked to see that my school had been burned down and that Mr. Hardy was reported to have been in the fire. 6 months later, our school was rebuilt. It was a much happier school and I soon made lots of friends. I am much happier now. The end.
Oh my God. Now, may I refer you back to when I predicted what you were like at school? And I literally said, the teacher's worst nightmare, not in a show off to your mates kind of way, more in a, oh no, that quiet boy set fire to the mass block kind of way.
Yeah, fair.
Come on. You burnt down a school so that all new people would have to come back. People would basically get a sense of perspective and realise we should be friends with that guy.
Yeah. It implies that some Carrie-esque shenanigans took place.
This is also, by the way, the third school burning down story
school
on this
fire.
Podcast.
School, really?
And, I mean, it's the third in this fucking episode, but it's the... It once again, it's not even in the same book. It's not even in the same collection, and it ties in loads of your themes that you always have. School, a location you use a lot, fire. I mean, we're going to end up with some ghosts because Mr. What's-His-Name was in there.
Mr. Hardy was in the fire, tragically.
Mr. Hardy was in the fire, so he's going to be haunting the school from now on.
Yep.
It perfectly ties together everything you wrote. Mm. Have you learned any new themes about your childhood from this experience?
Yeah, I think... What I would like to do is to go back to these themes for my next show.
Yeah.
Because it feels like there's a lot of unfinished business, much like a ghost.
Ghosts. I mean, if you have the end of your show, right, where we can't see what's happening, but you're clearly being dragged by something, and then your arm is out, and then suddenly your hand turns into a skeleton that goes brown and a ribbon comes on it, then you will it'll be standing ovation every night.
It will be amusing to only you if you come and see it. And no one else. No one else will understand what this is.
Yeah, and I won't go and see it because it's not really my sort of thing, your stuff. But anyway. There it was, Jordan Brooks / Andrew Dice Clay. Finally, I've been trying to book Andrew Dice Clay for years, and finally I got him to do his famous catchphrase at the end of a very slow and soft word misunderstanding joke. Listening back to that episode, I love the idea of him getting confused as to what a children's book publisher was. Just publishing books by children. It's lovely stuff. Check out Jordan's work if you haven't seen it. I think he's got two specials available on his website, which is jordanbrookscomedy.com. So he's not that risky a comic, actually. If he was, his website would be jimdavidsoncomedy.biz. As ever, please give the show a review on your podcast app of choice and tell your housemate that you need to have a word at 6 p.m. and then leave the country for several years, writing to him or her on the 7th anniversary of the day you were supposed to have a word, saying, are you still on for 6 p.m? And then at 6 p.m, phone them up and just say, listen to Early Work, and then hang up and delete their number. It really helps the podcast if you do that, so we'd really appreciate it. Thank you. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.